Hello
Hello everyone,
everyone.
welcome to our first 2023 edition of our The Week That Was in Europe podcast. My name is Dirk Schumacher, I'm the head of European macro research at Natixis, and with me, as usual, is Klaus Adam, professor of economics at the University of Mannheim.
Hello also from my side, so I hope you all had a good start into the new year. So today's topic is the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, or IRA in short, that was signed into law by US President Biden last August. The Inflation Reduction Act contains a number of fiscal measures, and we want to review them, especially the ones that have potentially economic consequences for the European industry. And then we shall discuss how the EU might have to respond to these IRA measures. But before jumping into our main topic, we have a brief look at the latest economic indicators coming out of Europe, and there have been quite a number of them, right, Dirk?
Indeed. So inflation obviously remains the most watched indicator given the overall nervousness of central banks and markets, therefore. So we had in euro area the headline inflation number for December that declined to 9.2% after 10.1%. Core inflation, however, that is excluding food and energy, edged higher to a reading of 5.2 after 5.0. So we can be relatively certain that we have seen the peak in headline inflation, given that energy prices are coming down quite a bit, given that we've seen the euro appreciation, and given that supply chain problems seem to be getting smaller and smaller. But it's not clear how quickly core inflation will stabilize, so that will keep markets still at the edge. At the same time, numbers regarding the growth outlook were pretty solid. So industrial production numbers, and that refer here to November, across the board were quite okay-ish, given the fears that the energy price shock would lead to a recession here. So overall, the recession fears seem to be diminishing. Also, because the income shock for the coming month seemed to be smaller, given that the gas price has come down so significantly. So it's not surprising that we at the same time also had a couple of ECB governing council members making quite hawkish comments, suggesting that the ECB is certainly not done with hiking rates. But let's stop here and move on to our main topic. Klaus?
Right, so let's move to the American Inflation Reduction Act, and as the name suggests, the act aims to reduce inflationary pressure for U.S. consumers, and it contains a rather diverse mix of policy measures that supposedly work to achieve that. If this act were a company, we would perhaps say it's a conglomerate. So one of the bigger expenditure items of the act is, for example, a measure that brings down prescription drug prices for U.S. seniors. It's quite a substantial part in terms of the money involved, but that's not really the part that interests us, right?
No, we want to concentrate in today's podcast on the measures of the Inflation Reduction Act that are related to clean energy. These have potentially the biggest impact on Europe. And that is not only because these measures seek to reduce climate emissions in the US, but also because some of these measures imply that market access for European industrial companies in that area could be quite difficult in the US related to that act.
Yeah, I think the energy and climate related measures contained in the IRA can be seen as a response to Chinese economic policy. China clearly seeks to obtain technological leadership in key areas related to renewable energy and the climate transition. And supposedly it's achieving this by heavily supporting its domestic industry in these sectors. So overall, the IRA foresees around $380 billion of investments into climate protection over the next 10 years in the United States. And I think this is overall a good thing. But an important aspect enshrined in the act is that it promotes the so-called Buy American policy that has been proclaimed by US President Biden, and it's implemented via so-called local content rules.
Yeah, to make an example, the IRA includes subsidies for the purchase of electric cars, but these subsidies are made conditional on one crucial assumption, and crucial components, specifically the battery of the car, needs to be produced in the US, and that's the so-called local content clause. And these subsidies can amount to around $7,500 per car, which is arguably a significant enough sum so that it could tilt the buying decision towards a car with an American-produced battery.
Yeah, and this policy for batteries already seems to have consequences. So according to press reports, Northvolt, a European company that specializes in car battery production, as well as Tesla, have both canceled investment plans for European battery projects in response to the IRA and are now considering building these plans instead in the United States. Of course, it's somewhat difficult to know how relevant really the IRA was in influencing these decisions, but the nervousness of European car makers, and also Asian car makers for that matter, is clearly understandable.
Yeah, what angers Europe is that the IRA affects Europe negatively as much as it does China, which arguably was the prime target of the act, but perhaps not the only one. And interestingly, the local content rules do not apply to Mexico and Canada, with which the US has a free trade agreement. Given this, and with hindsight, it was perhaps a bad idea at the time not to go without US free trade agreement, the so-called Transatlantic Trade Investment Partnership. Things might look a bit better if we had signed this free trade agreement with the US.
Yes, and the subsidies for electric vehicles are actually not too big in overall size. They amount to around $13 billion. But the Inflation Reduction Act also contains subsidies for the renewable energy sector. In particular, investors are eligible for a subsidy of up to 30% on the installment costs of wind or solar power stations. And again, this subsidy increases to around 40% if certain local content requirements are fulfilled.
Some commentators have argued that the overall size of the IRA in relation to the US GDP is rather small, 0.1, 0.2% per year, and that there would be consequently no need to respond with countermeasures. In addition, Europe's own Next Generation EU program is an even bigger program, so that the US is simply doing what Europe is also doing.
Yeah, it is true that the funds that have been earmarked under the Next Generation EU program are overall larger. They amount to around 750 billion euros, and they are also spread over a shorter time horizon, quite less than the 10 years that apply to the US program. But to our knowledge, at least, this program, the European program, has no requirement regarding local content rules. And U.S. companies could thus be fully eligible and can compete on a level playing field. Moreover, the funds spent under the American Investment in Inflation Reduction Act, they are very small relative to the size of the U.S. GDP, but they may be big enough to have a significant impact in specific industries, and the promised subsidies may be sufficient to cause the marginal company to shift its investment from Europe and the US, as the battery example seems to suggest.
Over the past month, the European Union has been negotiating with the United States about relaxing some of the restrictions that apply for European companies. These negotiations, however, now appear to be making little progress and have prompted the European Union to file a WTO complaint against the United States. Yet, with the geopolitical situation being what it is, Europeans have probably little appetite to start an outright trade war with the US. And this makes it likely that other measures will be taken instead. Most likely ones relate to some sort of industrial policy. Various proposals are already in the making in Brussels. But which of these would work and would make sense for Europe, Klaus?
Yeah, there's good reason to remain skeptical. Let's keep in mind that it's just not difficult to find examples where industrial policy failed miserably. Just think of the German magnetic elevated train, the so-called Transrapid. This train was developed with heavy subsidies, then installed in China to connect just, Shanghai City to Shanghai Airport. It was never sold anywhere and then copied by Chinese engineers. So this said, it is also possible to find some examples where industrial policies have worked. One might think of the European airplane company Airbus. So the really interesting thing that needs to be discussed is under what circumstances is industrial policy via the direct or indirect financial support for specific industries really beneficial to an economy? And what are the pitfalls of such approaches as the magnetic train, was just one example of?
Let's start with a discussion of why it may be beneficial for a country or an economic area to give companies a helping hand from the government to establish themselves in new sectors, industry, and say, such as the development and production of electric batteries for cars. There are two classic arguments in favor of industrial policy that are related to the so-called infant industry line of thinking. The first considers a situation where domestic companies need to catch up with foreign companies that are closer to the technological frontier. And unless these domestic companies are shielded for some time from foreign and more advanced competitors, they simply would not be able to compete. High fixed costs associated with these activities that need to be recouped may then explain why domestic companies need protection to be able to catch up.
Yeah, and the second situation that is usually considered relevant is a setting in which there are strong so-called learning by doing effects. So this describes a situation in which companies become more productive the more they are active in a certain sector. In the technical language of economic theory, this is sometimes referred to as non-convexities or increasing returns to scale in production. These non-convexities imply that first movers typically have a large advantage over followers and can simply outcompete them.
These learning by doing effects are in fact very strong in fields such as renewable energy production. And we've done a podcast with Professor Reichenstein October 21st last year, where we discussed the green transition, and where Professor Reichenstein made clear that in these areas there are significant learning by doing effects at work. So to catch up with potential leaders or to race ahead of foreign competition, companies might thus need help from governments.
Yes, but it's important to keep in mind that both of these arguments are actually arguments that make sense in economic terms only when viewed through the lens of a national, through the national lens. You can protect or support my companies and gain at the expense of other companies abroad. So the underlying situation is really one of distributional conflict between different economic areas or different countries. Whether these subsidies or protections make sense from a worldwide view is a very different question. And there, the case to make them is, of course, much weaker.
Yeah, just to mention that, a thorough account of how industrial policy shaped, for example, the rise of Asia is given in Joe Studwell's book, How Asia Works, Success and Failure in the World's Most Dynamic Region. The obvious question now is to what extent the infant industry argument could be applied to electrical vehicles, given that European car manufacturers seem to be lacking the expertise in battery production. This question is obviously difficult to answer without a deep understanding of the technological abilities of European car makers and how difficult it would be for them to ramp up production without government support. We thus refrain from attempting to answer this question. Well, I would simply conclude this is not necessarily a yes or no answer.
Yes, and there are also arguments in favor of industrial policy that go beyond the simple infant industry argument. And one argument that seems relevant is path dependency of innovation. So companies that have invested heavily in one technology, say the internal combustion engine, as many of the European car manufacturers have, can become reluctant to invest in other technologies, say battery production. The reason is that their innovation capability in the old technologies is just so much higher due to the accumulated knowledge. It then needs external triggers to redirect technological innovation, either carbon taxes or the industrial policies or the subsidies associated with them.
Yeah, this point is made in an article by Philippe Aguignon and co-authors that has been published in 2016 in the Journal of Political Economy, which is titled Carbon Taxes, Path Dependence and Directed Technological Change, Evidence from the Auto Industry. So there is indeed good reason to believe that you can face this kind of situation where path dependence is relevant and therefore a potential argument for government intervention.
Yes, but let's keep in mind that there are also good reasons why industrial policy may fail or even be detrimental with regard to the stated goals. And we really shouldn't forget about these. So perhaps the number one issue is the problem with capture by special interest groups. While it may be really possible to formulate general principles under which industrial policy can be successful, it is really easy to see how things can go wrong once measures are translated into law. Special interest groups will almost inevitably try to shape the specifics of the law into their favor. And given the opaqueness of the legislative process, at least when it comes to all the fine print and so on, the final measures, as applied in reality, could be tweaked in a way that they undermine the initial intent or simply make the measures a lot more costly for taxpayers.
Yeah, and then there is the potential short-termism by policymakers who need to produce nice pictures and quick wins. So even in the absence of any inappropriate influence of special interest groups, governments have an incentive to choose projects, measures that produce the biggest bang for the buck in terms of media coverage or messaging to the general public. Less telegenic, but maybe more effective measures whose positive impact only unfolds over time may seem less attractive from this perspective. In short, the weighing of the pros and cons of different measures may be less focused on the pure economic effect than it should be.
Yeah, perhaps one way to mitigate these problems, both of them that you just mentioned, is to provide so-called horizontal support. That is providing an educational and physical infrastructure that would make it easier for domestic companies to catch up. Public research into battery technology that can be tapped by domestic companies would be one example for that. Investment in research and development hubs. This is even more true if we assume that there are positive externalities from research and development activities that would imply that private companies actually underdo these activities.
Yeah, just to sum up, industrial policy is not necessarily a question where clear-cut answers are available, as it may be difficult to establish whether the conditions under which government invention can be successful or at least achieve the stated goals prevail or not. At the minimum, this argues for continuous reassessment of any policy action and monitoring of the result it is producing on the ground.
Okay, so now let's discuss, with all these caveats in mind, in our final minutes, an aspect that we haven't touched upon yet, namely the geopolitical dimension. We mentioned above that the Inflation Reduction Act could be interpreted as a measure that is targeted against China and to some extent also against Europe, with clear distributional goals in mind. But the geopolitical considerations that go well beyond the purely economically motivated distributional conflicts have also become more prevalent and add another dimension to industrial policy. Rising political tensions between China and the West and the Russian attack on Ukraine have clearly shown that questions of resilience, questions of supply chains and economic independence in strategic sectors may need to be reconsidered. While there can be little doubt that a more fragmented global trade system will be less efficient and produce lower welfare for the world than a system without all these trade barriers, the efficiency associated with a very open system may come at the risk of being blackmailed economically.
The European solar industry is a case in point. So Chinese companies now dominate almost all the steps in producing solar panels. With the green transition and the massive increase in solar-powered electricity that all the European governments have penciled in for their plans for green or the zero emission economy we want to achieve, all that is reliant on Chinese imports. Thus, whether the EU can reach its goal of being climate neutral by the middle of the century will crucially depend on whether China will be exporting the needed solar panels. Whether this puts the goal of climate neutrality at risk will also depend on how the political relationship between both sides will develop. Thus, the ability of the EU in recalibrating its relationship with China is, to some extent, limited by its reliance on China achieving the green transition. So the political room for maneuver is smaller, all else equal, because we need China in order to get the green transition done.
And perhaps to some extent, the similar reasoning applies to the US. It's, after all, not so clear how close an ally the US will be going forward. The cracks have opened. And in particular, when we hear the US first mantra from the Trump administration being replaced by the Buy American mantra of the Biden administration, which sounds awfully similar, America first.
Yeah, and related to this is also the question whether the EU needs to signal its willingness to retaliate. This may be necessary despite the fact that the impact of the IRA may overall be small. Europe might have to signal to future American administrations that going down the route of Buy American will have economic costs. So discussions between the EU and the US government seem to be heading towards some concessions with respect to the local content requirement, but according to European negotiations, progress is very limited. But let's wait and see. A decision is expected to be made in March.
Yeah, the situation is clearly in flux. French Finance Minister Bruno Le Maire and the German Economics Minister Habeck have already proclaimed that they would like to pursue a European green industrial policy. And not surprisingly, they both argue for more government intervention to make the green transition work. And particularly, they call to build up sufficient European production capacity in these key technologies. Also, just yesterday, we heard news reports that indicate that German Chancellor Scholz is in support of a fund, of an EU fund, that would subsidize green technologies and in order to counter the Inflation Reduction Act. So we will see how this will play out, if this is just posturing to get something out of the negotiations, or if we really see the Buy American strategy complemented by a Buy European strategy, which would be a very unfortunate outcome, I think.
Yeah, and it's also safe to assume that this topic, regardless of now how the conflict about the IRA is resolved, will not go away. Let's just hope that both parties, the US and Europe, can come back towards creating a level playing field between them again. Well, speak to you next week then, Klaus.